So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
What do you think about the new Facebook metaverse and all Mark Zuckerberg has had to say about creating this new reality in this new world, and it's all online, even replacing the internet? We'll talk about that later on here in the show. Did you hear? Okay, so not that I'm even remotely interested in the show, but there were some interesting comments that I think leads to an opportunity for conversation. By the way, if you're just joining us, I'm Timory. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio, and it's Gentleman's Hour here on Trending. Now, you don't have to be a man only to listen, but love to hear from you, gentlemen. Enjoy the topics. Dive in. Okay, so Sex and the City, that terrible, awful, nasty show that was a show that consumed many of my peers just a little bit above me in the millennial generation and up, has been rebooted, kicking off next month. Horrible, okay? Horrible. And you may think so many different things. Yes, it's the same characters. And yes, it's 23 years later. I'll get to that in just a little bit. But it does provide an interesting conversation because people who have known to call Sarah Jessica Parker a horse face for years is now experiencing new scrutiny because she is hosting one of the people in this show that's rebooting of Sex and the City. I'll get to that in a minute. But she's offended and she's calling people misogynists and calling the criticism misogynistic about her appearance. But is it really? And it really does bring up a conversation. How do you not objectify someone who objectifies herself? I'd love to hear from you. The number's 1-888-914-9149. We're going to dive into that and more here on the show. We'll talk about St. Joseph and how he's the spouse and the mother of God. Do we really ponder the significance of him being a spouse to Our Lady? A spouse like so many of us. We'll unpack that and more. But first, I want to come to the trial, very, very controversial trial that's been occurring. Everything from BLM to you name it kind of weighs in on the insanity of this trial itself. And that is Kyle Rittenhouse, the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. It's controversial. It's being polarized on multiple sides. Media hasn't been fully reporting on it. Of course, has a bias. I don't want to get into the weeds and the whole trial or even talk about the trial itself. But what I want to talk about is one very, very important and pivotal topic that much of what this trial itself is about, even if you're not hearing in the media. That is self-defense. And again, it's Gentleman's Hour here on Trending, and I want to hear from you, gentlemen. Has the Kyle Rittenhouse trial made you reconsider using self-defense? You can give me a call, share your thoughts, 1-888-914-9149, or you can go to my Instagram story now and vote, yes or no. I'd love to hear from you. I'll share in just a little bit what the outcome of that vote is. But if you'd like to share your thoughts, you can follow me at Timory, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E on Instagram, and vote yes or no. Gentlemen, has the Kyle Rittenhouse trial made you reconsider using self-defense? I think it's an important question. I want to talk about self-defense in two ways from a Catholic perspective. But first, we have to understand this trend that has been occurring. It's this trend where so many men are saying today that they have concern about the consequences for themselves and the ramifications for their family if they utilize self-defense and protecting themselves and their family, even when it's totally just and fair. Many men have commented today that they're already walking around with big targets on their back for, let's say, being Christian, believing that marriage is between one man and one woman, being pro-life. And so part of the concern is that if you utilize self-defense and someone labels you for being, let's say, so-called anti-gay or whatever it might be, homophobic, that it's going to become something it's not. And it's not just going to be about self-defense. You hear, and I've heard of many men, my husband included, who have turned to various forms of martial arts to have the capacity to take a fight to the ground and end it quickly. Self-defense with hands and no weapons. Why? Because you add a weapon to it, you add being Christian, you add being anti-LGBTQ, pro-marriage between one man and one woman, pro-life. You have to protect yourself. You have to be cautious today. But I think that all of this conversation surrounding the Kyle Rittenhouse trial really does provide an interesting question. Has a Kyle Rittenhouse trial made you reconsider using self-defense? Some people are saying yes, some people are saying no. Again, you can vote on Instagram. But all of this has been making me think about the self-defense debate on a bigger picture and how there are other forms of self-defense beyond just taking a fight to the ground, being able to end it quickly. And it has to do with our nature as human beings. You have to remember that as human beings, we have a nature. We have a body and a soul. Now, if you were to unpack philosophy and really think about who we are as human people, because this is important, we understand that nature is made up of matter and form, but mostly form. This is a fundamental element of philosophy, the philosophy of the human person. So nature is made up of matter and form, but mostly form. So body is the matter for us as human beings, and the soul is the form. So that means that we're body and soul, but mostly soul. And so we have to see this dynamic between body and soul. You see, if we understand the soul is the form of the body, we understand our function, our meaning, our purpose. The soul gives the body an identity. It defines what it can do and how it can even act. You see, everything, when it comes to form, the form speaks to the matter. The soul, everything on the form does to the matter, the soul does to the body. The fact that we are what we are is due to our soul. You see, a dead body has a form of a dead body. The soul, and this is why it's so important, the soul is a form of a living body. And the soul has an end, an eternal end with God. It means you and I as human people have a purpose, an end. We're not just bodies to be idolized, materialized, or objectified. We do need to protect our bodies. And, you know, so often when we talk about self-defense, we talk about defending ourselves because often we wait to defend ourselves until it's necessary to protect our own comfort, to protect our own beauty or functions of our body, our mobility. But do you think about self-defense of the soul? Isn't it interesting? All of these conversations are raging across the conversation surrounding self-defense. Well, what about your spiritual life? Okay, and I just said something that trigger, should be a trigger for you. I hate it when people talk about their spiritual life. And I was talking to someone about this recently. Your whole life is your spiritual life. Why are we talking about, oh, I really need to like work on my spiritual life, or, you know, X, Y, and Z about my spiritual life? No, my spiritual life is my whole life. And that's why self-defense conversations should actually be conversations that cover the whole person. And that's why I was just talking about a fundamental dimension of philosophy of the human person, that we're body and soul, but mostly soul. So my question for you is, have you thought about what spiritual self-defense looks like? Or have you only considered physical self-defense? I want to talk about a few things, three, and we could talk about so many, but I want to discuss three things that I think are really, really important when we talk about spiritual self-defense, because this should be a fundamental part of our active participation in life and being on the offense as well before you have to be on the defense. Shouldn't that always be the goal? That a fight is ended before it even starts? That's the whole idea of self-defense. The goal is, especially in the martial arts, that you never end up within any type of context of actually having to fight. The fight is over before it happens. I remember a kid came up to my brother wanting to fight him. And my brother has done a lot in, you know, self-defense, martial arts, boxing. And with one move, he stops the guy. He prevents a fight from occurring. He shows his capacity to initiate and show force. All of this is, I think, a really good and important means of understanding that, again, a fight has to stop before it before it even begins. And the same thing, just as it has to do with self-defense, the same thing has to occur within the context of spiritual warfare, within the context of spiritual self-defense. So there are three things I really want to encourage when we talk about physical self-defense on the side of spiritual self-defense. And the reality is that if we are working on spiritual self-defense on the daily, our likelihood of ending up in physical conflict, we're going to anticipate and be aware and be humbled before the need for self-defense, I think, is as necessary as it may seem, because we're going to be more prudent to not allow ourselves to be in situations that would require physical self-defense. We won't be in the situation to begin with. We're going to be more temperate in our reactions to other people that would prevent us from creating a situation or participating in a situation that could be problematic. And so here are three areas that I want to talk about when it comes to spiritual self-defense. Because remember, we're body and soul, but mostly soul. Our spiritual self-defense matters just as much. Number one, and this should be like bare minimum. Like this is the starting line for spiritual self-defense. And this is a wake-up call for us as Christians. We've got to be in a state of grace. This is the minimum. And again, this is Gentleman's Hour here on Trending with Timory. You want to be a good man? You want to be a virtuous man? Be a holy, humble man. Go to confession regularly. Be aware of your sin and the opposite virtues that you can grow in and pray for to combat that sin in your life. Remember, virtue, the root of virtue is vir, which virile, you know, this word, it has to do with being manly. To be virtuous is to be manly. And when you're in a state of grace, this better predisposes you to live a virtuous life. You have the life of Christ within you. The seven gifts of the Holy Spirit, the 12 fruits, all of these virtues that are absolute gifts. Everything from fruits of the Holy Spirit, such as gentleness, kindness. And then you have gifts of the Holy Spirit, such as courage, you know, going deeper into fortitude, acting in the face of fear, even to the point of death. All of these are special graces that we have infused in us, especially when we are in a state of God, when we are with God, when we have God on our team. You want to talk about spiritual self-defense, have God on your side. Have him with you. Have his life flowing through you. And that's going to help us in the context of physical self-defense as well. And it's been said by many of exorcists that the demons cannot touch you when you are living a sacramental life in the state of grace. What does that mean? You have not only no mortal sin, but you're regularly going to confession, even confessing those venial sins. That you're regularly going to receive Holy Communion, the Eucharist, and you're doing so worthily. That you have a prayer life. You're in tune with your struggles, with your gifts, with your talents, because you are turning it all over to God. So this is why I say the bare minimum, you want to live a life of self-defense, especially spiritual and physical self-defense, start with being in a state of grace. Bare minimum. It's time. Stop making excuses. Whatever you might be battling, I don't care how bad it is. Jesus Christ forgives all sins. He heals all. He works miracles. Okay, the second of the three things I want to talk about when it comes to spiritual self-defense is pray your rosary. Pray your rosary. And I want to say this especially within the context of the culture we're in. We're going to talk about this Sex and the City reboot and how Sarah Jessica Parker is so offended by so-called misogynistic comments that are coming out about her. 23 years later, they're remaking the show. You do the math and kind of think about this. Okay, well, when we're talking about this objectification, because this is what it is, of a culture surrounding women and self-objectification of women, well, in that type of culture where pornography and everything is so difficult, remaining faithful in our marriages, everything that's around us, our rosary, to turn to the Blessed Virgin Mary, the holiest of women, and ask her intercession and honor her as a woman in the face of the dishonor women receive today, that's actually an act of being on the offense. And I think that so often in our culture, when we talk about self-defense, we're so often on the defense. Well, let's be on the offensive side. Be in a state of grace, number one, to pray your rosary. This is the warrior thing to do. I love, you know, when we talk about the history and tradition of the church, the monks, when they're in the monasteries, they often pray what's known as the Liturgy of the Hours, the prayers that all the priests and religious pray throughout the day, 7 times a day. And as they're praying, they usually pray, used to always pray either in 2 parallel lines facing each other or in a U shape. And the 2 sides were split in half, and 1 side would chant the prayer, and then the other side would chant the prayer. And they go back and forth chanting the prayer. And the idea was, is that as 1 side would call out praising God, and the other side would, then not only were they praying and praising God, they were calling 1 side to the other back and forth, and they were challenging them in what is understood as spiritual combat. Take up your sword. Take up the sword of Christ. And so often we hear religious monks who will talk about how their rosary is their sword. It is their means of being on the offensive. This is spiritual warfare. And the third part of, I think, this spiritual warfare dimension that we have to have, especially husbands, fathers, you're listening to us during our weekly Gentleman's Hour here on Trending. This one's a hard one. For all of us. And by the way, all of this can apply not just men, women too, but especially to the men in our society. The third one is fasting. We know Jesus Christ said, and I say it over and over again, when he came down after the transfiguration from Mount Tabor and some of the apostles were trying to cast out demons from this man, from this demoniac, they couldn't do it. And Jesus comes down, takes care of business, demons are gone, and his apostles are talking to him after, like, Lord, why couldn't we do it? And he said, don't you forget this. He said, some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. Some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting, but it is so hard. I remember I was terrible in college. You know, I went to a small Catholic school, you know, doing the Catholic stuff. And one of the Catholic things you do when you're in Catholic university is you try your best to, you know, fast. And, you know, you're learning how to fast. You're also probably comparing, like, well, did so-and-so eat some Cheetos because they were starving? Yeah, you ate Cheetos. Okay, come on. It's Good Friday or whatever it might be. You know, you're going through. But then the attitude was, okay, Good Friday's over. It's midnight. We can go and gorge on In-N-Out and you know, do this and that. The reality is that it's missing the point in a certain respect. We're talking about fasting. We should be utilizing fasting to temper our desires. Not just say, like, okay, at midnight, I'm gorging on those cookies and In-N-Out. Fasting is an act of humility because we are not strong enough to fast alone. You can't do it alone. I'm not saying this because I'm like patting myself on the back, but I remember a few years ago, I was able to fast because traditionally one of the callings for fasting was to fast from, basically you fast after Mass on Holy Thursday, right? After Mass on Holy Thursday, all the way until Sunday. Easter. It's one of the good reasons why you go to the Easter Vigil, right? Okay, so you fast from that Thursday all the way through Sunday. And I did it, and I was so proud of myself, but I shouldn't be proud of myself, and here's why. In a certain respect, it was easy. It was probably one of the most prayerful triduums I had ever had. And continuing to unite yourself over and over again in your desire for food and overcoming that desire for food and offering those hunger pains up for God, it almost becomes easy because it's so purposeful. You see, this is the significance of spiritual combat, of having that spiritual self-defense already built up. And remember, this is so important, the demons cannot touch you when you are in a state of grace and then you add fasting. Some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. This is what we should be talking about and better understanding as we have this concern in our culture today about self-defense, especially in face of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial and everything that's happened and the controversy that has occurred surrounding that and the media bias. At the heart of the conversation is self-defense. And I'll share with you, I'm looking right now, if you voted on Instagram, it's not too late. I was asking the question earlier, does the whole Kyle Rittenhouse trial make you reconsider self-defense because of the ramifications, the consequences that people are seeing today? Especially, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's almost, I mean, many men have said it's like having a target on your back if you are a person of faith and you believe in traditional marriage. if you believe, you know, in life beginning at conception, and you defend and protect children from abortion. I think all of these are important. So we had a couple hundred people looking and voting here on this, and the vote shows we've got 74% said that they would not reconsider using self-defense in light of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and 26% said they would. So basically, one in four men are saying that they would reconsider using self-defense in light of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Something to think about, challenges we have. It's a reminder of the importance of spiritual self-defense. Not too late to vote. I'd love to hear from you. You can go ahead and vote on Instagram, 1-888-914-9149, if you'd like to call in and share your thoughts. You're listening to Trending with Timmy. I will be back in just a little bit. You're listening to Trending during our weekly Gentleman's Hour. We're going to unpack St. Joseph from the perspective of being a spouse. We talk so much about his fatherhood, but what about the fact that he was a spouse to the Blessed Virgin Mary? It's really interesting if you think about the reality, the day-to-day. Also, we're talking about the metaverse, Mark Zuckerberg living in these virtual realities, and Sarah Jessica Parker. We'll be right back here on Trending. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You're listening to Trending with Timmery during our weekly marriage hour. And I want to talk about St. Joseph. St. Joseph, it's Wednesday, and if you don't know the history and tradition of this, I actually talked about it here on the show. You can listen to the podcast. We'll include a link in the show notes today where I discuss why we dedicate Wednesdays to St. Joseph. We'll include that in the podcast notes, and we'll post on social media as well. Lucas will go ahead and do that. But St. Joseph, one of the titles he has in the Litany of St. Joseph, and if you've never prayed the Litany of St. Joseph before, please do. And by the way, I gave a talk here at Relevant Radio. It's available on demand for you. It's part of our 19 on the 19th podcast that you can find in the Relevant Radio app and the on-demand shows. It's one of the top shows. And I gave a talk on the Litany of St. Joseph. And one of the titles that I didn't dive deeply into, but that I find so much benefit from pondering, and I think it's important to ponder, especially during our Gentleman's Hour here on Trending. And if you have any thoughts where, you know, I think a lot of men tend to take St. Joseph as their patron, and they think about him. You think about him while you're working. You think about him as you're, you know, going through the movements of everything that happens in the day-to-day at home. You probably pondered his life a lot. If you have something to share about him as a spouse, I'd love to hear it. The number's 1-888-914-9149. As I was really thinking about St. Joseph as the spouse to the Mother of God, we think so often about him as a father, but not a lot of him as a spouse. He had an intimate relationship, a holy relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary. We know that they lived a virginal, chaste relationship, but for some reason our culture tends to think of intimacy just as sex and not as, simple physical touch, holding hands, or sharing and enjoying a beautiful sunset, a nice romantic dinner. And there's so many, intimacy is so much more than what we're talking about. It's intellectual intimacy, spiritual intimacy. I mean, praying together can be a very intimate act. Sharing your prayer life, you know, sharing your petitions out loud, even praying to your patron saints together. All of that can be an intimate experience. And when you think about St. Joseph as a spouse, you know, we forget that he wasn't just the legal father of Christ on earth. He had a wife. And the Blessed Virgin Mary would literally introduce him as, "This is my husband." That's pretty significant when you think about it. They were together as a pure and virginal couple. Mary made meals for the three of them. Saint Joseph helped to provide the means for that meal. Mary complimented her spouse. Joseph would compliment Our Lady. Saint Joseph would pray for Our Lady. He would pray to God for Our Lady. Imagine him praying to God for her for the strength to live out the vocation that she did. And, you know, praying for her as she delivered Jesus. You know, I think of how my husband commented so often how when we had our first baby this last year, he's like, I felt so helpless. Like, there's nothing I could do. You were doing everything. And, you know, that's this opportunity to just pray and be there and be strong. And one of the things of being strong is having this strong character, having a virtuous character, but having a strong spiritual interior life. And imagine St. Joseph would have been praying for the Blessed Virgin Mary as she gave birth. St. Joseph would have prayed for the Blessed Virgin Mary while she was away visiting her cousin Elizabeth, helping care for her. St. Joseph was probably missing the Blessed Virgin Mary, wishing she would come back. He's even probably, like, really proud of her for the care she was giving, even in the beginning part of her pregnancy. The beginning of pregnancy for a lot of women isn't fun. I wonder if Blessed Virgin Mary did or did not have morning sickness. You know, some women don't. I don't know. I'm just curious. Like, did God spare her from that? Very interesting thought. Well, we know one day, right? But I mean, to think about St. Joseph as the spouse of the Mother of God, again, we think so often about his fatherhood, but not those simple day-to-day things of being a spouse and how he can model being the true Christian spouse. And I would say, in a certain respect, even better than he can model this even better than the Blessed Virgin Mary. And here's why. Because I love Our Lady. She is the perfection of femininity. She is the perfection of humanity. However, she was preserved from original sin. And we know her to have never committed a sin. And so St. Joseph has a little bit different of an experience. Because he was not preserved from ever having that original sin the way Our Lady was. So I think he struggled more in a different way than Our Lady did to the divine promptings and the day-to-day of being a spouse. Now, we know St. Joseph to be a very humble and righteous man, but he would have struggled in the day-to-day moments as well. He would have had to make requests of Our Lady, you know, being upfront with her, like, I'm having a hard time here. Some people have said that it can sometimes be harder when you have two spouses, and let's say one is further along in their spiritual journey and the other is not. You know, so many people would think, oh man, it's so hard. You might say, well, my spouse isn't, you know, doesn't really care about going to church. They're just going through the motions, or I can't get them to go to church at all, or it doesn't mean anything to them, blah, 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 right? We go on, and all of that's legitimate. I'm not, you know, downplaying that. But it's often been said that it's actually even harder for the spouse who's less spiritual in the respect because you have something that they don't understand, that they can't participate in, that they can't share in. And in a certain respect, there was something that Our Lady had that St. Joseph didn't have. That preservation from the stain of original sin, that total and complete willing and promptness to the divine will of God. Saint Joseph did the will of God. He had this holy and joy-filled resignation, but a little more hesitantly. We read that he was planning on divorcing Mary quietly, setting her aside quietly when he found out that she was having a child. And the tradition holds that Saint Joseph did indeed know that the conception of that child was of some sort of unique, divine, miraculous origin. And he believed himself in part, some people have said, and in the traditions it's called, that he found himself unworthy and capable of being a part of that. And so Joseph had to have asked things of Mary as they're working through things. We're working through being the father and mother to Jesus Christ. He would have talked to her about his difficulties and his joys. They shared experiences with Christ. I mean, they had one heck of an experience. Talk about, like, parent moments where you feel really bad, parent guilt. They literally lost him when he was 12 years old. Okay, I remember one time, you know, people tell stories about, like, leaving their kids at home. Where you're like, luckily I've not done this. But I know people, I won't forget, they left their, like, two-week-old baby at home. They weren't used to having her. And they started, like, driving. They got, like, 15 minutes away because they had a long drive. And all of a sudden, everyone in the car's like, oh, my gosh. Oh, no. The baby. Now, praise God, you know, the baby's home. The door's locked. The baby was sleeping and didn't know anything that was happening. But, I mean, I can just imagine, like, the anguish of St. Joseph and the Blessed Virgin Mary. They lost Jesus for 3 whole days. We talk about it. What about the perspective of the spouses? Do you think that they bickered? And we have this perfect view of Our Lady. But you could still see, like, she would be totally just in saying, like, what did you do with our son? What happened? And he would be totally just in being frustrated. Well, I thought he was with you. Oh, this finger pointing back and forth. Saint Joseph was the spouse of the Mother of God. And I think that this is so significant for us to ponder. To ponder the intimacy that Saint Joseph and the Blessed Virgin Mary shared in their faith, in their common mission, in their shared experiences, in their humble service to the will of God, in their resignation to the will of God, and their observance of all that he commands. Time and time again, if you read the words of Jesus Christ, if you really read and ponder the Gospels and what Jesus says, if you've never read a Gospel, read one. Start with Matthew. It's a great place to start. But you'll see Jesus Christ will talk about observing all that he has commanded. He talks about doing his Father's will. Well, Saint Joseph is one of the perfect models of doing the will of God, of observing all that he commands, of humble service, not just going and offering burnt offerings and sacrifices. Because you have to know, the Jewish people, they had to offer a lot of sacrifices. Oxes, doves, you name it, all of these things that they would offer. First fruits, a bunch of the work of their labor. But the thing with the new covenant that Jesus Christ ushered in, and the reason why we don't make all of these bloody sacrifices, I mean, could you imagine? They would, like, kill a bull, they would kill a lamb, and they would sprinkle the blood on the people who were standing there. Thank God we don't have to do this. It would be one smelly, smelly circumstance. But then again, they think we're crazy because we drink the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ in the blood of Christ, right? In the Eucharist. But coming back, why St. Joseph, why this was so significant, Jesus Christ ushering in the new covenant? Well, those bloody sacrifices weren't necessary because he was the ultimate sacrifice. And so what does he ask of us now? No longer to offer the pigeons, no longer to offer the bull, the scapegoat, or any of these things. But he talks about a circumcision of heart. So we read in Jeremiah and Ezekiel that God requires mercy, not sacrifice. That who we are is being transformed in sacrifice. That we are the sacrificial offering being united to Christ himself. This is what St. Joseph lived out as a spouse to the Mother of God. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. I'm going to come back talking about during our Gentleman's Hour because it is significant. Actress Sarah Jessica Parker is slamming apparently so-called misogynistic criticism about her appearance as the reboot of Sex and the City, known as And Just Like That, comes to the show, TV station, whatever near you. I'll be right back here during our Gentleman's Hour.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, it's Gentleman's Hour here on Trending, and I want to hear from you. How do you not objectify someone who objectifies themselves? Okay, coming up, we're going to talk about the metaverse and all of that from Mark Zuckerberg. But first, this is really not important at all, but I thought it was an interesting conversation. So that nasty show, Sex and the City, is being rebooted. If you think it's anything but, I'm sorry, I disagree with you, you're wrong. It's being rebooted, the so-called revival, 23 years after the original launch. It's called And Just Like That. It's coming out in December. Who cares? Unfortunately, people watch this. I mean, people are reacting though. Okay, so here's the deal. You've got to laugh at this because it is true. When news came out about the reboot of the show again 23 years later. I mean, these girls are not as young as they used to be. Sarah Jessica Parker and some of the others. Yes, it's not a reboot with a new cast. It's the same group of people, because let's be real, these people are the only people who really care about watching the show. I hope people have moved on from this. Okay, so people started making fun of the reboot because they were showing photos of like the original young Sarah Jessica Parker and the other actresses then versus today. And they started posting and sharing photos of the Golden Girls. If you've never seen that show, you can look up an image. You'll get a kick out of it. But Sarah Jessica Parker is really upset, and she's slamming so-called misogynistic criticism about her appearance. Now, Sarah Jessica Parker, the poor woman, has been the butt of many jokes, calling her a horse face, among other things. I mean, everyone knows that people call Sarah Jessica Parker horse face. I'm not calling her that. I'm just saying this is someone who knows and has experienced public criticism regularly. But it's interesting, because I want to come to the fact that she's throwing this out there as misogynistic chatter. Because there was a comment even by the show writer, Samantha Irby, who she said, "I think it's revolutionary to do a show about middle-aged women with their aging bodies." Okay, seriously, it's a reboot of Sex and the City. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody. And my husband, I told him, by the way, I'm talking about this tonight. And his reaction was, "Gross, they're all ugly old hags now, though." And I asked him, by the way, if I could say that on air, because some people are going to be like, "He's so mean." He's not. And my immediate reaction, I started laughing, because they're not that old. But here's the deal. I asked, "Why is that gross?" And he's like, "You do the math. 23 years later, they're rebooting this nasty show all about sex and wild sex lives. Like, come on. Are you serious? Nobody's got time for that, and nobody wants to see that. And the only people who are going to are people who want to feel better about themselves or who are addicts to this type of show. And that's just gross." And so here Sarah Jessica Parker is, totally offended because of all the misogynistic chatter, like the thing that my husband himself said on immediate reaction. I even told him, "Can I quote you?" So I have full permission. But why? Why is she and her other co-stars from the original show and now the new one and Just Like That being so criticized? Well, because they self-objectified themselves for so long in that show and for years after. That's why I asked the question, how do you not objectify someone who has objectified herself and done it for years? I think that's a really, really important question. And especially in our growing pornographic culture, I mean, everything from the ads we see, the movies, the way that our own peers dress. I was just looking at a girl who, like, is so talented, so brilliant, has an incredible, like, the work she's doing is so good, and I really admire her work, and I went and looked at her Instagram. I was horrified by everything she wore every day. I mean, I'm talking about, like, basically wearing crop tops and less than that every day, regularly. And I say that because it's hard for you as men to not objectify someone who's objectifying herself, and so what do you do? What do you do in a culture where women are objectifying themselves? Number one, eye contact, my friend. Work on your eye contact. Don't let your eyes wander. Don't go for the elephant in the room. She knows it's the elephant in the room. You don't need to show her it's the elephant in the room, because she's trying to let people know it's the elephant in the room. Eye contact. I was in a professional environment about 10 years ago, and I'll never forget, there was someone who kept making a really big deal about the way the girls were dressing within that context. And sure, some of them could be dressing more appropriately, but many of them weren't dressing that bad. But this person who had a problem with the way the girls were dressing kept complaining about it over and over again. But then the girls were complaining that he would give them the up and down every time they walked by, in a lingering up and down. And so finally, we had to address this man and say, like, look, yes, we understand that modesty is important. It needs to be addressed. However, your roving eye is causing women to be extremely uncomfortable and to feel disrespected. Even if they don't dress well, they're feeling disrespected. And so I think that part of this, why is eye contact important? For the sake of yourself, in the face of a culture that is self-objectifying itself. But also for the sake of that woman who perhaps knows nothing but to objectify herself. Working in the crisis pregnancy centers for years, I remember we'd be working with women who had been in the worst and worst situations. Everything from having been in legitimate prostitution to physical sexual abuse, harmful relationships, having been through abortions, having chosen to have their babies outside of these contexts. Well, we'd work with them for years, and some girls would come back over and over again. You'd help them through college. You'd visit with their baby. You'd be with them while they were going to their first job interviews. I remember sometimes you'd work with these young women who had been so objectified in the culture, were truly a product of the culture, but they were trying. They had mentors and people who were helping them. And they'd say, oh, I'm going to wear this outfit for my interview. What do you think? And one of the hardest conversations to have with these girls would be about what was and was not appropriate to wear to an interview. They just didn't know. They didn't get it. And so this is why I think eye contact is so important. Because we have girls who are broken, who have been through so much. And perhaps no one has ever shown them the loving mercy of just maintaining eye contact and showing them it doesn't matter what you wear to this interview. You'll receive the interview based on merit. So this is why eye contact is so important. This is why my second thing on this list, and the question is, how do you not objectify someone who objectifies herself? Second thing on the list is to compliment the right things, to affirm the right things in the woman who's objectifying herself. Because again, perhaps she hasn't known anyone who has given her any second thought about anything apart from her body. Third, sometimes it requires distance. Sometimes women have to learn a lesson. Well, why aren't I receiving the attention, the interaction I want? You know, true natural shame, guilt, discomfort, all of these things are actually a good and okay thing that can be learned when I've talked to women, you know, so-and-so avoids me. Well, why do they avoid you? Because the way you dress makes them feel uncomfortable. You know, these are things, and that's why sometimes physical distance can be the most merciful thing to do to someone who continues to objectify themselves, to not objectify them. But finally, the thing I want to come to when we're talking about this whole Sarah Jessica Parker and Sex and the City show being not even just rebooted, but relived out as the new show and just like that coming out next month. Don't watch it. Not worth it. Nasty show. I think the final thought I have on how do you not objectify someone who objectifies herself. Gentlemen, I'm begging you. Have realistic beauty standards. I know a lot of you do. But we live in this culture with everything from the movies, the ads, the pornography. Everything's photoshopped, edited, sprayed over, manipulated. So to have this requirement that a woman always looks youthful. Well, real men don't seek always youthful looking women. Real men respect and honor age and beauty. And I hope someone in her life has shown that to Sarah Jessica Parker and the other women who are in this movie who are self-objectifying themselves. We live in a culture where every woman today feels a constant pressure to look hot and available. And I'm talking about not young 9-year-olds, and I mean it when I say 9-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 60-year-olds. This constant pressure to always look hot and available. Well, gentlemen, you have to know yourself. At a certain point, that gets boring. It's unsustainable. It's unrealistic. For marital relationships, it's unrealistic for dating relationships. We have to see and honor and respect the truth of the human person. And this is why, you know, being more aware of what we watch, what we consume, and knowing, I'll never forget some years ago, I saw a photo of a woman who was posing, she had no makeup on, her hair wasn't really done, she's laying down on her side for this photo, and they go in and Photoshop her. They lengthen her legs, give her a bigger butt, cut off part of her legs to make her legs thinner. They lengthen her chin, pull up her eyebrows, you know, move her cheekbones, and then they spray paint makeup on her. They give her hair. They change her upper body. They change everything about her body. It's not even the same person. That's how images are edited today. And so these standards that we have based on images we see are very significant in helping us to understand that if that's what we're allowing to set the standard, there's going to be a lot of heartbreak and discomfort, not just for you as gentlemen, but especially for the women who are expected to meet that expectation. Again, I hope someone will show Sarah Jessica Parker something other than what she's calling misogynistic chatter. It's not just misogynistic chatter. It's women who are placing this level of expectation on her in criticism. But that's what happens when you have this continuing culture of self-objectification. We objectify. We do what we know. And that's the culture we've lived in. But those are four whys: eye contact, distance, complimenting the right things and affirming, and realistic beauty standards are what can help to not objectify someone who's objectifying herself. You're listening to Trending with Tim Marie here on Relevant Radio. I want to talk, and we'll probably have to unpack this more later on in the week as well, the metaverse. Oh, my land, to the metaverse. Okay, Mark Zuckerberg back in October gave a speech talking about how they're renaming Facebook and Meta, and he's all about this new term that he's coined, the metaverse. He says it's going to replace the internet. It's going to replace life, office relationships, friendships. It's essentially this merging of the virtual world and real life. He talked about how you can virtually go to a concert with friends, fence with holograms. Doesn't he know we already did this with the Wii? I mean, we already did this with the Wii. And with all those Zoom meetings, I mean, we have truly experienced enough meetings with all of our colleagues, and those people especially who forget to mute themselves or turn off their video in places they shouldn't be going during Zoom meetings, but they do. We've already experienced all of this, so I don't know why he thinks this is new, but it is, and we have to take this seriously. We should listen to what he's saying. This metaverse is going to create a context in which people just see what they want to see. People interact with people they want to interact with. They create their own social network, and everyone else is blocked out. They don't have to interact with anyone else. You can even create a false alias or change or manipulate your alias. Weight, sex, height, all changeable. Don't worry if you don't like your body, you can change it. You know, I always get a kick out of when someone on Facebook, and I'm sorry if you do this, but I just think it's weird. If you're going to have regular interactions, like, I want to see a real person because we shouldn't be using the digital space to hide. But I always think it's weird when someone, like, puts as their alias, their profile picture, like, a rose or even worse, a cat. Like, why not just put a thorn? Okay, the reality is that they're putting a rose or a cat, whatever other image they want, because there's a reason why they don't want to put their image up. Whether it's they want to be anonymous, they don't like the way they look. But here's the thing. The metaverse, even the social media world that's been perpetuated for years, says that you can be anything or say anything. You can do anything. It's essentially this whole idea of you do you. Anything goes, you do what you want. Life's all about you. But the reality is that it's a delusional. It's a fantasy literally lived out online. And some of us are kind of already living our fantasies online. You say something I don't like, boom, I can unlike you, unfriend you, unfollow you, mute you, block you, any number of things. All of this, though, the metaverse and what's really part of this whole transhumanism world where you upload your mind is ultimately a denial of the body and the soul. It's almost this claim that only the mind matters. It is a fake reality. It is tunnel vision. It's a slavery to self. It's a slavery to your own desires. You are not free in this metaverse that Mark Zuckerberg has been creating for years with Facebook, the purchasing of Instagram, and all the other programs. Don't they also own Snapchat? I think they have Snapchat too. Do they? Yeah, they do. So as he's talking about the metaverse, we need to get a grip and understand that this is already occurring. We're already living our lives in the digital world, not socializing, not talking. And it's time that we stop building our own Tower of Babel. Think about it. Genesis chapter 11. They start trying to build this tower. They're working to build this great large tower high up into the skies. Why do they want to do it? Because they want to create a name for themselves. It's all about them. It's all about what they want. And God allows their languages to be confused. He confuses their language. Why? Because of pride. We are so prideful that we think that we can create our own reality. That we can have tunnel vision. It's all a slavery to ourselves. It's turning in on our own desires. It's ultimately a denial of body and soul. It won't make us happy. It will only lead to things such as the Tower of Babel, where people turn in on themselves and ultimately miss God, miss their neighbor, and miss the greater calling of the human person. So don't live your life in the metaverse. Choose to live in real life, and I hope it makes you reconsider the way you use social media. I'll be back tomorrow here on Trending. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Thursday is Veterans Day, and Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossen joins me to talk about life-changing stories of service and how serving changed his life. Thursday is our marriage hour, and I'll talk about the two couples who swapped babies after an in vitro fertilization mix-up, that's IVF, even after carrying those babies to term. Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.